Hey everybody, this is Adam Shartoff, your host of Film Wax Radio. It is Friday, February 16th, 2024. This is episode number 794, and I am so excited to bring back one of my favorite guests. I love bringing on authors because they get to read their books and enjoy that and then talk to them about their books. It's a big thrill. It's almost like having a filmmaker come on and talk about their film. Sam Wasson was on back right before the pandemic. Like, I'm talking about, like, days before the pandemic, back in, I think, the very end of January of 2020. And Sam had just released a book about the making of Chinatown called The Big Goodbye, and it was a thrill to have him on that time. And now we have a bit of a relationship, so to bring him back on to talk about his latest book, which is called The Pathway to Paradise, a Francis Ford Coppola story, was just a great deal of fun. It's a beautifully written book and researched book, and it's available everywhere, so it's very easy to find. I recommend it strongly. This is Sam back on the podcast for his second appearance here on Film Wax. There's no reason to delay. This is my conversation with author Sam Wasson right here on Film Wax Radio. Sam.
How are you?
All right. How are you?
Good. Good.
Fantastic. Just going to admire your books for a moment.
Oh, go ahead.
It's good to see you. It's been a while.
Yeah. How
since long we talked. Well, whenever the last book came out.
Oh, over a year, well, maybe.
Wait. So there's been a book since the Big Goodbye?
Yes, there was a book, The Oral History of Hollywood, that I wrote with Janine Basinger.
With Janine Basinger. Yeah, I was going to ask you. Oh, okay. I missed that one. Oh, that's too bad. I would love to have had you both on for that. I've been wanting to have her on. I mean, that would be incredible.
She's the one. She could speak about my book better than I could.
Oh, no, I understand. Yeah, no, I mean, she can't be still like at Wesleyan, is she?
No, she's not at Wesleyan.
Retired from there.
No, she's retired. Yeah, yeah. Right.
But she's still alive and well? I mean, well, she's alive, of course.
She's alive and well. She is she is the greatest on this subject on the planet.
I know. I would have to figure that out. Like, that would be kind of intimidating, right, to talk to her.
Yes, but it is intimidating. You should be intimidated.
Exactly. Know your place.
That's understand, the right response.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Understand the situation fully.
Yeah.
Don't go in. Yeah. Don't be naive about it. Well, talk to me. So let's just do a little name dropping. I mean, this is a really fascinating and freshly told. It's actually called a story as opposed to a biography or something else. Because and it does read like a story. It reads like a movie. It's fantastic, and it's so entertaining. And I learned so much that I did. I thought I knew everything on Coppola, but you proved me wrong.
What did you learn?
Oh, well, I guess you're turning the tables here. I see what you did there.
I don't want to put you on the spot. I just honest.
That's
question.
Okay. Yeah. That's okay. But no, I mean, I guess it's been out there to some degree, but maybe that he did grapple with Francis Coppola. Maybe he did grapple. First of all, dropping the Ford thing, can't trust a person with three names. Didn't really know that story, but also like maybe a real struggle with some level of mental illness, possibly.
Yes. That was a big part. I learned that too. It had been alluded to in interviews,
right?
That I had read of Francis, but I'm psychologically inclined, and so I see that as a defining characteristic. You know, it's not just a detail, and it's been presented as a detail. I find that hard to get next to. The way in is through the psychology. So that was formative for me in how I was going to approach this story, which is about ecstasy and catastrophe, which is what manic depression is.
It's finally at a point, I think, where we look at a story like that, and like, or you know, a person like with like Coppola, and you know, we're so past, I think, at least the majority of us are so past that the stigma of it that now we
Oh,
can,
yes, right. That's right.
and so we can tell a story like this without that being something, you know. But it's interesting because, you know, he was we know he was untreated, right? He was un right di he probably was not diagnosed, right?
No, not until after Apocalypse, is when he started the treatment and with lithium.
Lithium, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just there's so much in here. So but
Exactly.
to tell me, start let's start to, by telling me maybe some of the folks that you talk to. And how and what that process is like, because I have no idea, like getting access. Obviously, you have at least four or five books behind you that can't hurt to
Yeah.
get you in the door.
Right. Well, I ended up speaking to about 250 people.
Wow.
One of them was Francis Ford Coppola. One of them was Eleanor Coppola. I did not speak to Lucas. Lucas was very hard to get to. And everyone that I tried to help me was just saying, you know, you'll make yourself crazy.
Really?
Don't even try. And you know, that's all right. That's all right. It's not Lucas's story. Obviously, I would have liked it, but I don't think the book suffers in any way because of it. I reached out to Francis and I said, you know, I really want to position you, Francis, as n not the director of The Godfather, but as the founder and major creative force behind Zoetrope. I really saw that as the center of Francis's creative life. The Godfather, as we know, was an accident. Francis didn't want to do that. It didn't was not a passion project. He took it because he needed the money, and lo and behold, made two masterpieces. But it was not what he was about. It's still not what he is about, I don't think. Obviously, thematically, what it's about, but the style of movie making is not native to him. Francis wants to be a maker of small personal movies and be a leader in the movie business for other young film for young filmmakers to do the very same. He wanted to recreate the system, and that's what Zoetrope is. He wanted it to be a utopia, not just a studio, but a way of living and being together. And knowing this, that Francis really is a beyond a filmmaker, a utopian, I came to him with this information, and he said, "No, I'm done. I don't want to talk anymore. I'm done. Good luck." And I put the book aside, and I wrote the Big Goodbye, and the Hollywood book, Hollywood: The Oral History. But this thing still kept nagging at me. I felt it was too important. And so I wrote Francis and I said, "Francis, you know, respectfully, I love you too much to not do this." And eventually he came around with the endorsement of some people who were close to him, saying that I was doing a good job and I understood what he was about. And so Francis said, "Okay." And from that, it grew into total access, not
Like,
just to people, but the archival material, most of which no one has ever seen. And that included, we were talking about his mental illness, correspondence with doctors, physicians, and mental health professionals going all the way back to the 50s.
wow.
So it was very intimate. And having Eleanor there made it very intimate because it is also a book about marriage and love. So
And
I needed
family.
And family, of course, right. And I spoke to Sophia, obviously, and Roman Coppola, Francis's children. So my access was total and voluminous.
Once you have access to the, your subject, once you have the Coppolas, it's got to be a lot easier, right, to find other people
Yeah,
to interview that were close with that we're in the orbit, and then
you can now write in your letter of introduction, Francis endorses this project, and they say, okay,
yeah, right. A lot of biographers like not to write the unauthorized book because then they're not beholden to their subject at all.
Well,
What
I
was
wasn't.
that, or what was that conversation like?
Right, exactly. This is not authorized, it's not unauthorized. I had Francis's endorsement no matter what I wrote.
Okay.
And that's because Francis respects the writer and the creator. And Francis is not an ego. People get that wrong about Francis. They think because of his outsized spending, he is an ego. And all people also think that people in the movie business, especially directors, have an ego. I think that's because people feel like it's such a coveted job that anyone who has that job would be smug. But it's not the case. If you're any good, you don't have an ego, in fact, because you have to see truth and see other people. It's part of being a good storyteller.
Yeah, I mean, an ego is the thing that actually blocks your way of a pure vision, actually.
Exactly.
And then,
Exactly.
so might argue that you have to kind of be blustery and larger than life and all these things that we associate with ego in order, especially nowadays when so many projects, for financial reasons, are hinged on, the casting. If you have a major star in your movie, the director has to make it clear who's in charge. So, there's that
You
business,
have
but
to be a
maybe it was less
leader.
of a situation. You have to be a leader, and but maybe they also back in were in these years were kind of referencing, roughly from You're a Big Boy Now through, One from the Heart, which is kind of the time frame of your book, more
Yeah,
or
that's the
less.
time frame of my book, right? That's why it's a story and not a life. I mean, the life the life, Francis spent about 10 years paying his debts after the catastrophe of One from the Heart. And a lot of those movies are not from the heart and are not part of the Zoetrope story because of it.
I see what you mean.
So it's a Francis Coppola story,
Right.
not a life.
Gene Kelly, another thing I did not know. You asked me
Yes.
before what I learned. I never knew this, that he, essentially, I don't know if hired is the right word, right? But
Yeah.
he did hire Gene Kelly. This was, before One from the Heart, right? In the creation, in the pre-production of One from the Heart, that he
In
wanted.
creating the dream studio of Zoetrope, one of Francis's ideas is we are going to have artists in residence. And Gene Kelly was an artist in residence, as was Michael Powell, as was Jean-Luc
Another, yeah.
Godard, and they were paid to advise and develop their own projects.
Amazing.
And of course, One from the Heart was a musical, so Kelly was there.
I had no
You know?
idea.
Yeah.
He might even be, I mean, I saw it many years ago, and maybe I wasn't looking closely at the credits. He's got to be in there, Gene
In one
Kelly.
per in
Yeah.
he's in the credits. Yeah. Yeah.
How
He's
many
good.
times are we t do you do you see everything over again? I guess you got to see everything, and
You don't, it's not so much about watching the movies over and over again, because you're telling the story of a life. It's less critical, from an artistic point of view, critical in terms of critic, I mean,
Right.
not judgmental. Some biographers choose to have more criticism in their work. Peter Cowie, who wrote a very nice biography of Coppola, oh God, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
He is
Kind of takes them apart.
he goes he will do extended writing on the work. That's not my inclination. I really want to focus on the story of the man.
Right. Right. So tell me about these interviews with Francis Ford Coppola, like how many hours or how many days and where were you? And I'm kind of trying to set the scene, if you will.
All over. I went up to
Yeah.
Napa and spoke with Francis in his library, in his office. We spoke on the phone. We spoke by Zoom. We emailed. I flew down to Atlanta where he was shooting Megalopolis. All over. You know, one of the things you're mindful of is to not waste somebody's time who's been interviewed. You don't want to lose that credibility of asking them questions they've already been answered before. So if I walked in there and I said, Francis, what was it like directing The Godfather? He'd roll his eyes,
Yeah,
you know?
sure.
So it's not about the time spent, which is to say, I didn't spend hours and hours with Fran, you know, I did spend a lot of time with Francis, but it was not we, you know, it was not months, you know, it was not
So,
months.
in other words, you did a lot of due diligence in order to avoid those boring questions, right?
Of course.
But he still has to be patient and still interested in telling his own story, right? He still has to be willing to go over old ch chapters of his life and the painful parts and the right. I mean, the stuff he's talked about probably many, many times. He still kind of has to approach it with a sense of being available and accessible to you, right? For
He was accessible to every question. I mean, he was an ideal collaborator in that sense. He never said, I'm not going to talk about it. He never said, I've talked about this before. He was very respectful, and I think it's because I was respectful of his time. I mean, I'd really only go with him with a question I needed to know the answer to, as opposed to being merely curious.
got it.
And he wanted me to get it right. He wanted me to get it right. He respects history. A lot of people don't respect history.
Is that right?
And yeah, they don't
Is that what you
care.
run into as a film
Well,
journalist and author?
I think a lot of people, especially in the movie business, think that history is another fancy way of saying gossip. And they have good reason to think that. A lot of books that claim to be history really are gossip. And especially in the movie business, are interested in bad behavior.
Right, sure.
And one of the reasons Francis was disinclined to talk to me was because he was so hurt by Peter Biskind's book, Easy
Easy
Riders,
Riders, yeah.
Raging Bull. Yeah, Easy Riders, which is very much that way. Now, very well researched. I mean, Peter Biskind does a ton of research, and he is no dope. But his orientation is skewed towards the negative. And Francis really felt that Peter got a lot wrong in the sense of presenting one side of the story. So he was burned. And that's why I didn't want to talk to me, one of the reasons.
I
And
see.
so in talking to me, really wanted to get it right, to set the record straight.
And it appears you do. I mean, this is a very judiciously told story that you wrote. It's not, I mean, while it's fascinating, often funny. I mean, I just pulled a line which I thought was great. Someone wheels in an ancient fossil of King Vidor into the room, and Francis is like, let's find a project for King with this guy, because he was so obviously like in love with these guys.
Right.
He
It's a
it's such
great
a deep
story in that
respect.
way.
He can you
Yes.
imagine like bringing this guy out and trying to find a project for him?
And he could barely see King
Right,
Vidor. He couldn't
right.
walk and he could barely see, but Francis was still dreaming the dream for him. I mean, that is,
It's
I'm so
beautiful.
glad you picked that out, Adam. It's
Yeah.
beautiful. And that tells you exactly who this guy is.
Yeah. And just yeah, and the fact that Michael Powell also by then probably an elder statesman, right?
Yep.
When he came in, just amazing story. So talk a little bit about also because the way this is is structured, it's not linear necessarily. It's not necessarily told in a chronological way, although there are, certainly whole portions that are pretty pretty, you know, traditionally structured, but overall, I'd say you kind of approach it very differently. So I was just wondering, like, what thought went into that?
Well, I wanted to announce to the reader right away that this wasn't going to be a cradle to grave autobiography. And we weren't going to be Francis Ford Coppola was born, you know.
Right.
And I wanted to put it inside. I wanted to flash back because I also wanted the reader to have a sense of this coming from Francis's lived experience in the present. And that sounds strange when you say you want a flashback, but I wanted to give you a, how can I put this? I wanted to show you what was on the line immediately and what was in Francis's mind and show you that the whole story of his life was a part of him wherever he went. And in the jungle, most urgently in Apocalypse Now. So, and I also wanted to show a breakdown. And when you break down, you're flashing back.
Mm.
You're not totally in the present. You're scattered. I wanted to create some kind of a sense of a psychological analog to that frame of mind.
In the now that and he's in production of Megalopolis, correct?
Mm-hmm. Post-production.
What's that?
Post-production.
Oh, he's now in post-production. That's good news. He still approaches this with the same ideals that he, when he founded Zoetrope, American Zoetrope. Yes. So,
absolutely.
Amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. And should be said, Francis spent 140 of his own millions to make this movie. His own million.
Right.
I mean,
if he wanted to make, could he do anything else at this point?
You mean if you wanted to make
it? You know, Hollywood has left him. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think they left each other. I think they left each other.
Fair enough.
Francis could do whatever he wants. You know, he's got the fuck you money. He sold the winery, made, I think, about $1 billion.
Oh, my God.
Which is at least double the amount of money I have.
At and least.
About two or three times more than I have. So Francis can do whatever he wants. I think this is going to be his last movie. He said that. It feels like a last movie.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it fails or succeeds, I don't think it matters to him. It's a statement he wants to make.
Which is exactly the way he talked about making films back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
He has an attitude towards money that we should all have, which is, I can make more of it. I'm not going to let the want of this or the fear of this thing stop me from living the life I want to live and doing the work I want to do. If I run out of money, I'll make more. I'll find a way to make more money.
Mm-hmm.
And we should all think that way.
And that is also coming from a guy who not only went through patches of having no money, but owing quite a lot of money.
And I should say, this is not a rich kid. This is not a guy who, he's a guy who made all of his money. He came from a middle-class background in Great Neck, Long Island, and made all of his money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because he's a genius, a great producer, and America works.
Mm-hmm. It's called The Path to Paradise, a Francis Ford Coppola story. It's written by Sam Wasson. It's published by Harper Collins. Did you do the audiobook?
I didn't do the audiobook.
I like your voice, man. I wish.
Thank you.
But I was thinking, my God, the amount of work you'd have to do. I hope you know, if you were to do all that, I mean, that's just after writing it, then you got to read it.
Exactly. And it's scary to read it. You know, you think, oh, fuck, I shouldn't have said that. What? I forgot about this. You see everything you did wrong. So it's scary to go in there.
Oh, I see.
I did it for The Path to Paradise because someone needed to do it in a pinch.
But, what did what?
I did the audiobook. I'm sorry, not The Path to Paradise. I did it for the Big Goodbye.
Big Goodbye, rather.
Big Goodbye, yeah. Okay. I did it for the Big Goodbye, yes.
Okay, that makes sense. And after that, a little PTSD, maybe.
Yes. Yes.
And okay, so you do have a track record. You probably have a following. Well, you do, but are these books still like how hard like it is for Coppola to make a movie? How hard is it to publish a movie book? Like about a filmmaker from the 70s. I mean, he still obviously was making big movies through the 80s into the 90s, but how challenging is that?
You mean to get a deal?
Yeah. Is this still, I mean, there are a lot of people like myself who can't wait for your books, but
Thank you,
yeah,
Adam.
no, I mean, obviously. And I just wonder what if that pitching is still as challenging as it was when you started off, or what that experience
Thankfully,
is like
no.
for you.
Thankfully, no.
Good.
It's not an automatic in. I have a great editor, Noah Eaker at HarperCollins. We've done the last, we did this book, Big Goodbye, the Hollywood book. And Noah is smart about movies. He's so smart about literature. He gives me a wide leash, and he's smarter than I am and about a lot. So I wouldn't want to write a book that Noah wouldn't want me to write. So we have a conversation, and he'll say, no, I don't know. That's not, I think that's not, I think that's too ambitious, not ambitious enough, whatever it may be. And we talk until we're both jazzed. And when we are, then we have the conversation with our, my agent has the conversation about the deal. And if we can come to a number that we all like, we're in business.
That's great. And also I really love the jacket illustration. Thomas Walker, is
Thank
that the
you.
artist?
Thank you. Yeah.
Did
A
he
lot of
also
people
do the
don't
big
like it.
what?
A lot of people don't like that jacket cover. It's
Oh,
so
I
funny.
think it's perfect. I mean, honestly, it just shows like he's in the middle of some sort of the eye of a some sort of it looks like he's almost like in the eye of a storm or like of a some sort of tornado, which the chaos of a tornado, perfect in a way.
That's what I wanted, a tornado dream storm. Yes,
Yeah,
exactly. That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted. I'm glad you like it.
did Thomas also do the
No.
last?
No, no.
Okay,
No. No, I
I know
forget the name of the illustrator.
that's not neither here nor there. Well, it's there now.
There.
Did you get a chance to see the documentary Dark City, Desperate Souls, and the Legend of Midnight Cowboy?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I did see that. Yes.
It was shortlisted. It did not make it to the nomination level, sadly. But that was a lovely filmmaker. Nancy Bersky directed that, passed
Yes, she
away.
just died. She just
Yeah.
died.
And she was like a regular on here.
Oh, Adam.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, and actually I think it was probably one of her last interviews because I mean it was like the week before, or maybe something like that. We knew each other. I was at a screening of it up in the Hudson Valley where I am. It was, yeah, so I just another person very dedicated. She also had done a documentary on Sidney Lumet. So another somebody who's real, like besides also making a number of documentaries about stories from the civil rights movement or what have you, human rights and subjects like that. She also had made these two films about that period of time in film history and American film history. Anyway, yeah, it was a loss.
Yeah, I haven't seen her Lumet movie. I bet that's terrific.
It is. Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. Anyway, I'm going to strongly recommend to anybody who's interested. I mean, some of my favorite films, of course, are Coppola movies. I mean, it's almost a cliche, somebody roughly my age, but I remember being in, I'd already seen the Godfather movies, but I remember I was traveling on my own, visiting people in the West. Like I was in, Boulder. No, I was up in Portland, or I think I was in Portland, Oregon, actually visiting people I knew. I was, 18, I think. And it was only a few years after Apocalypse came out, but I was afraid of seeing it. I heard such terrifying things about this movie. And I was staying with these people I barely knew, some distant relative and her husband, and I was alone in their house or what have you. I remember they had a videotape of Apocalypse Now. at some crummy TV or something, you know. And I just remember putting it on, and it transformed me. You know what I mean? Nothing was ever the same again after seeing that movie, you know.
Yeah,
It was,
for a
you
lot of
know,
people.
yeah. Yeah. So anyway, this was a great read.
Thank you, Adam.
I mean, it's a little intimidating because I mean, there's so much I probably would want to talk about, you know, with you if we were just going for a long walk or something. But I want to respect your time and thank you for making time for this little
Adam, thank
podcast.
you for doing what you do.
Oh yeah, well, my pleasure. Thank you, and we'll do this again, I hope. Again, one last time. Here's the book. Must read for any film lover, any fan of you know, everybody loves the Godfather movies. This is a great book.
Thanks, Adam, so much. Thank
Yeah,
you.
and of course. Until next time. All right.
All right.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday out there
You too,
in
pal. Be
LA. All
well.
right. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Appreciate it. All right. Take care. Thank you. All right, thanks everybody for tuning in to this episode of the I Just Love Episodes Like That. I'm going to be back next Friday, of course, with a brand new episode here on Film Wax. Thanks for tuning in. Take care of yourself and the ones you love.